Stay tuned now on 1460 WVOX for The Ballot Box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin. The Ballot Box is a monthly program brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Now, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome to The Ballot Box. I'm Tamar Tate and I'm joined by my co-host Nita Lubin. And we're coming to you on this rainy morning on behalf of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle, courtesy of WVOX, 1460 AM, and our talented sound engineer, Gerald Bell. So, Nina, how have you been? How did voting go for you last week?
Good morning. We did early voting. That's our new go-to, empty, fun, enjoyable, relaxed, and over with. Otherwise, things are good. I've got the turtleneck sweater, the winter coat draped over the chair.
Yeah.
So our listeners can't see that, but it's my welcome to winter. Here we are.
All right. Well, before we jump into today's show, the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle has an invitation for you. We would like you to visit our website, LWVNEWRO, so that's LWVNEWRO.org, and think about joining us. The League of Women Voters, even though it's women voters, actually invites all genders into its membership. We are almost 100 years old as an organization, and we're completely nonpartisan. What we do is encourage informed and active participation in government. We do not support or oppose any political party or candidate. We're proud of our Vote 411 online education guide, and we have an active volunteer corps for voter registration and get out the vote efforts in area schools and colleges. We'd love to have people join us in those efforts. We produce in-person and Zoom candidate forums, and we'd love to partner with other organizations. So please, if you visit our website, consider joining or volunteering some of your time to the League, as much or as little time as you want. That's fine. If you'd like more information about the New Rochelle League of Women Voters, just contact our president. Her name is Joan Alexander, and her number is 914-632-2308. That's 914-632-2308. And I'm sure Joan will be happy to hear from you.
Thanks a lot, Tamar. I've personally enjoyed the volunteer work very, very much that I've done with the New Rochelle League. It is meaningful work. And a word for listeners on behalf of our county league, the League of Women Voters of Westchester, which invites those interested to attend a virtual presentation about the proposed 2023 Westchester County operating budget. It'll be held on Zoom on Tuesday, November 29th from 2 to 4 p.m. The presentation will be led by the County Budget Director, Larry Soule. Mr. Soule will be available to answer questions following the presentation. You've got to register in advance, and you can do so by going to the Westchester County League's website at lwvw.org, lwvw.org. So, as Tamar noted just a minute ago, voter education and getting out the vote is a fundamental mission of the League of Women Voters, because voting itself is fundamental to a healthy, working, representative democracy. Well, we just had an election, and that election held more than a few surprises. Who better to have as today's guest than an experienced political observer and writer, which is exactly what we have on the line, David McKay Wilson, a journalist with Gannett Suburban Newspapers since 1986, authors the Journal News Tax Watch column. In addition to finance, David has over the years covered city halls in New Rochelle and Yonkers, the county governments in Westchester and Putnam, and the state legislature, as well as kept a finger on the pulse of Westchester transportation and politics. So thank you for making time to join us this morning, Dave, and welcome to the Ballot Box.
Glad to be here.
Great.
So, Dave, this is Tamar. Thought we would take a deep dive into several of the local races, but before we get into that, let's start with one or two broad questions. First, voters' choices held surprises for both our major parties. And you have a keen eye on politics, Dave. Was there anything that particularly surprised you personally?
Well, I don't know if it was so much of a surprise, but it was a substantial change in the political landscape, which was the election of Mike Lawler, the assemblyman from Rockland in the 17th Congressional District, where he unseated Representative Sean Patrick Maloney. That was a race that I covered. And that was a nationally watched race. Sean still is actually the chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. He was targeted by the Republicans. Mike Lawler ran a great race against him and was able to beat him by this very slim margin, about 3,000 votes. So that was really the biggest story in our region.
You know, we were thinking of getting into the weeds on that race a bit later in the show, but since you brought it up, maybe you can talk to us about what issues were actually at play in that race.
Well, Mike Lawler certainly defined the race as a race about some of these state issues, even though it was a federal election, crime and crime in New York City. So he made the race about crime, about the state's bail laws. And that seemed to resonate with the voters. He was very aligned with the message of the Republican candidate for governor, Lee Zeldin. They had a very similar message on these issues. It was all ginning up this fear of crime in New York City, by the way, not really in the suburbs, because crime is actually falling in the suburbs, I found through my reporting. But it was this, this constant, harping on crime. Meanwhile, Maloney tried to talk about the Democratic agenda, abortion rights, gun safety, federal assistance on a whole raft of measures following all of the programs that were approved in the last session of Congress that brought huge amounts of money to the region. So Maloney was stressing the success in Congress, but couldn't quite overcome the crime message.
And you didn't have any sense that we were going to have that switch from your prior reporting? Was that a surprise?
Well, it was. We all knew it was going to be a close race. It is a swing district. It was a new district. It was came out of the redistricting, so you never quite know during a redistricting year. Maloney did not have, this was a new district. About 30% of his old district was in the new 17th. He didn't have Rockland County. That was new to him, and that's where Mike Lawler came from. And though Democrats outnumber Republicans by 2-1 in Rockland County, they do vote Republican, as witnessed by the Republican county executive there, and they tend to be more on the conservative side. So Mike Lawler, that was his base of support. So it was not a total surprise, especially when you have $10 million in outside money coming into that race. Maloney countered with outside money of his own, plus what he'd raised. There's $20 million spent in that race.
Listen, Dave, thank you for that. Was a good snapshot regarding that race. And also, I appreciate the little gem you had hidden there that by your account.
Let's return now to the ballot box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the ballot box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning and welcome back. We are speaking with David McKay Wilson, who has been a journalist for some time now. His written work in the Journal News and digitally online at lowhud.com. So, Dave, given your decades in journalism, I have a question, again, a broad question that's not about any particular race. Have the newsrooms that you've been involved with, have they rethought or discussed their coverage, and in particular, I guess now, coverage of the midterm elections, to accommodate these changes that we're seeing in the political climate? I'm thinking specifically of the challenges of misinformation and disinformation, of how to approach the publication of poll results, and how to cover election deniers who are running for office. This is something we're all increasingly aware of. And how do newsrooms feel about this?
In Westchester, I have to say that the election denier movement is not really strong. You didn't have candidates out there during this election season claiming, at least in Westchester that I was able to hear, claiming that Donald Trump had won the election in 2020. However, there, you know, as a journalist, there's always the issue of checking the facts of the slogans that are, spoken about by the candidates. When Mike Lawler was talking about crime and all, I fact-checked that issue. He, in fact, told me that murders were up, car thefts were up. Well, in fact, they were down. So that was a way to fact-check it. So it was really, that's just basic journalism that I have, that I learned many years ago in journalism school and have lived by in my over 40 years in the field. So, but it certainly has changed over that time period. Back in the day, we had many more competitive races here in Westchester County as well. These days, the competition is not quite as fierce as it used to be.
Why do you think that is?
Well, part of it is the rise in the Democratic enrollments in Westchester County. I remember, I think it was back in the 90s when the Democrats surpassed, but it used to be a very competitive two-party system in Westchester County. When I was covering the County Board of Legislators back in the 1990s, it was it was very close who had control. Would the Republicans have control? Would the Democrats? Would there be a power-sharing deal with the Republicans and the Democrats? And now you see today on the County Board of Legislators, 17 members, 15 Democrats, a Republican, and a conservative. So the countywide, the two-party system is just that the numbers have, with the growth in the Democratic enrollments and the Republican enrollments, have stayed fairly stable.
You know, before the break, when we were talking about the Sean Patrick Maloney upset, you mentioned outside money coming into the races. And I was wondering, where was that money coming from primarily?
Republicans had something called the Congressional Leadership Fund, which was that's a super PAC in Washington that gets money from all sorts of wealthy people. Sean Patrick Maloney had a couple of outside groups contributing to him, the Police Benevolent Association of New York City in his primary against Alessandra Biaggi, where they attacked her for her defund the police rhetoric a few years ago. And then he also had money. There was another something, the Save Hudson Political Action Committee, that had $300,000 from the Realtors Political Action Committee. So that was real estate money. So it comes. There are special interests who want to help influence both sides of the election, the Republicans and the Democrats. Maloney in the general election got $4 million from a Veterans Political Action Committee, even though he had not he was not considered a veteran. So there's lots of big money there, and on some of these big races, they want to get in and help influence how it goes.
It's interesting when you start picking up the rocks and seeing what's underneath and where the money is actually coming from and how that shapes our system locally. I was also wondering, Nina had asked about how your newsroom was handling all these different challenges. We didn't mention polls. People have been upset about how poll results play out and how they're reported by the media. What's been your experience reporting on the poll results?
I don't really report on the poll results, frankly. I'm more interested in the issues at hand. So if I were to report on a poll, and I didn't report on a poll in my coverage, and I covered the Maloney-Lawler race and the Maloney-Biaggi primary, I just didn't do it. But if I were to do it, I would have talked about, you know, look at the sample, how the samples are put together, what the margin of error was. But I pretty much try to keep away from the predicting and the polls. I find it more interesting to write about the issues.
You know, I'm always very leery about the polls. Actually, when I was in high school, a long time ago, I worked as a part-time job doing public opinion surveys. And even then, it was amazing to me how when you word a question just like a word or two differently, the answer can change. And
oh, yeah.
Even with your intonation, the answer can change when you're asking the question. So whenever I hear these poll results, I'm always very skeptical. But people, I think, are aware of that. And I think a lot of people are feeling that polls have too much power in coloring our sense of how an election might be playing out. But anyway, that's our cue for a break. And we will be back shortly with Dave McKay Wilson of the Journal News.
Let's return now to The Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back. We are talking with David McKay Wilson, journalist. And during the break, we actually had a question come in from a listener, David, so I'm going to set aside my burning questions about the 16th Congressional District and relay his question to you. In general terms, he's interested in knowing your thoughts on the results from the Hasidic community, the Jewish Hasidic community here in Westchester. Any thoughts?
I'm not clear on the voting from the Hasidic community in Westchester. I was following the vote in Rockland, which has a much heavier Hasidic. And the traditional ultra Orthodox block vote, about 10,000 votes, went to Sean Patrick Maloney. However, there was some people say even almost as many votes from the Orthodox community went to Mike Lawler. He was he's been very much in touch with the parents of Orthodox parents whose children are schooled in the yeshivas. And there's been a push on the state level with this issue of substantial equivalency in the education of both public and private school students, and there's been a question whether the yeshivas provide a substantially equivalent education. Mm-hmm. And the parents, there's been a pushback from the parents for the state increasing its oversight on the yeshivas, and Lawler had been in, you know, very much supportive of these parents. So there was a sense that some of the, you know, many of the Orthodox voted with Mike Lawler as well. It wasn't totally to one candidate. So it was basically split.
Interesting. So I'm deducing that, I mean, what you're suggesting is that with regard to the Rockland Jewish community, though, it does not vote as a complete group, you know, religion-wide.
Right.
I think another thing with Lawler was he had been the assemblyman for that district for 2 years prior, so they were familiar with him, and I think he was fairly responsive to that community's interests over the time he was in the assembly.
Yes, he, that's what I was told, that he was, you know, he really worked that community. He was, Mike Lawler was an assemblyman who, you know, he was very active. He's a political consultant, so he understood the, you know, how, certainly he's a political professional, but he also understood the, you know, the hard work that it takes to really, to show up, to be there. And this being a new district for Sean Patrick Maloney, that's where a Lawler had a leg up in Rockland, because he was known in Rockland and he was around. That was all new turf for Maloney, and there was for Maloney there were certain bad feelings from the primary that he had with Alessandro Biagi, the Westchester state senator. So that's one of the ways that Lawler was able to make some inroads.
Okay, thank you on behalf of our caller. There was an interesting election, I would even call this a surprise, perhaps, in the 17th Congressional District, where Democrat Josh Riley, who had left a major law firm to run for Congress, lost his race to Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro. In a pretty close contest, Riley had a $1.4 million cash lead in that race and was five points ahead in the polls going into Election Day.
But we don't believe polls.
we have, you know, well, then nevertheless, that's what the polls said. So yet he lost. And interested in your thoughts on that and wondering, by the way, given that the league had spent so much time dealing with redistricting matters over the past year, and really our state ill-fated redistricting process, could the redrawn district maps have had something to do with that?
Well, that was a new district. That was and it was kind of an odd. That was actually the 19th, I believe. That Mark Molinaro won, and it was a district that stretched from Dutchess County all the way over to Ithaca. So it was a long, kind of skinny district. I believe it had a Republican, it may have had a Republican advantage. Neither of the candidates had been living there. Molinaro was actually slightly outside of the district. Riley had been in Washington for many years. He knew Washington, but there was criticism from the Molinaro camp that, you know, the guy had lived down in Washington for the last 15 years and now is moving back to run. And Molinaro was, he had a certain name recognition. He did run for governor, and so that got his name out there on a statewide basis. And he had a fairly good reputation as the Dutchess County executive. So he had been around. They knew him out there, mm-hmm. at least some people did, because he had that statewide campaign against Cuomo.
Right.
I want to pull the conversation a little closer to home, to Congressional District 16. In that district, we had the incumbent, Democrat Jamal Bowman of Yonkers. He defeated the Republican Dr. Miriam Levitt Flisser, who was the former mayor of Scarsdale. Bowman had some spirited opposition in the primaries. Maybe, Dave, tell us about the issues that Congressional District 16 voters seem to care most about and how the future of that district could potentially unfold. It's such a diverse district.
It's a very diverse district. That includes Westchester's biggest cities, Yonkers, Mount Vernon, New Rochelle, and White Plains. So it's a heavily urban district with the suburbs in between and also a chunk of the north central Bronx. In the primary, and it's also a heavily Democratic district, very difficult for Republicans to win there. So any race in that district takes place in the Democratic primary. And so we ended up in this race with Bowman, the incumbent, first term, very progressive, a member of the squad, against Vedat Gashi, county legislator from up in Yorktown, who had announced he was running when that district first was going to go all the way up to Yorktown. He was going to live in the district. And then that district got thrown out. The new one, he stayed in the race. And then Catherine Parker, another county legislator, she jumped in the race. What happened there was that the two Democrats kind of split the anti-Bowman vote. He still got more than 50% in the primary. So,
what were the issues that people seemed to care about?
Well, there were issues there regarding Bowman's support for Israel. Bowman's whether that was strong enough about his support for Palestinian rights. So that was an issue among some people in the district.
Well, he really flipped on that, because once again, coming back to our issue of redistricting, once Riverdale was carved out of his district, he changed positions.
Well, he became more, I think he became somewhat more moderate on the issue, but he was still out there. And then there was questions about his vote against the infrastructure plan at one point, withholding his vote on that because he wanted a better deal. So those were some of the issues that were there.
Okay, thanks. We're coming up yet again against another break. I think it'll be our last one of the hour. And we will meet you on the other side, everyone.
Let's return now to the Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Hi, welcome back. We are talking with David McKay Wilson, Journal News, LowHUD.com journalist. And I'd like to ask, zoom out a little bit, Dave. Tamar and I feel, correct us if we're wrong, that Westchester and Long Island have historically been kind of aligned in their politics, but more recently we're now seeing a divergence, with Westchester leaning more Democratic while Long Island has been leaning more Republican. Is that accurate as far as you're aware? And if so, what do you think accounts for this development?
Well, the if you look at the at the results of this year in the statewide races, you know, the Democrats in Westchester were winning these statewide races, 60% for the Democrats, roughly 40% for the Republicans. But then if you look out in Suffolk County, it's really almost a reverse with certainly out in Suffolk, the Republicans getting close to 60%. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a much stronger Republican Party out there, and in fact, Lee Zeldin. I think some of the gains this year can be attributed to Lee Zeldin. He's a member of Congress. They could have a member of Congress. Westchester didn't have a member of Congress that was Republican. So I just think there's a stronger base of Republican support out there on the island. Their Republican Party has not suffered as much as it has in Westchester. So I think that's really the why the Republican Party has been stronger out there. I can't say. I don't really report out there. But I have seen how the Republican Party in Westchester has just really had a very difficult time, gaining any momentum.
Well, I guess you could say, we have these actually like an undercurrent of red in Westchester. You know, we do have certain, I guess, stripes going through. And it was an interesting year to follow that, actually, just in terms of the congressional seats that got picked up from New York State, of all places, was quite a shock. There are 62 counties in New York State, and the Journal News really serves three of them, right? Westchester, Rockland, and Putnam.
Yes.
I guess that's called the Lower Hudson Valley.
Yeah.
So, like, in terms of red, blue, purple, how would you color those three counties? And I guess sort of as a footnote, what trends would you see going forward for the future?
Well, certainly Putnam County is red. I live in Putnam County. I live in the town of Carmel, kind of the heart of the Republicanism up there. But Putnam County remains solidly red. New county executive there, Kevin Byrne, the assemblyman who covered part of Northern Westchester in his assembly seat, he wasn't even opposed for county executive. The Democrats didn't put up a candidate for county executive. They had no candidate for county clerk. And the
wow, I would call that red. Check.
That's red.
Putnam County.
That's red.
Okay.
Westchester, solid blue. It's the red elements are in northern Westchester, town of Yorktown, town of Somers.
Well, you do have Eastchester down county.
Eastchester down county. That's a Republican pocket.
Tuckahoe.
Well, the Democrats are, I think the Democrats may have a majority there now, or close to it. It's pretty split there. That's a competitive village. But it was interesting, in the most competitive state Senate district was Pete Harcum's district, Northern Westchester and Putnam. Pete lost Putnam decisively. But he was able to survive he only got, 54% of the vote. That was the closest legislative race. So, and then Rockland remains, you'd have to say Rockland is purple. It has a huge enrollment advantage to Democrats, but they can vote Republican, as occurred in the county executive there, and in the congressional race.
Right, as we saw in your answer to the Hasidic question earlier. Sure, purple.
Yeah. That they, people, they're not voting the straight, the straight party line there, and there's an active Republican party there that gets people elected.
Yeah, it was interesting in a lot of ways, I guess, locally was a sort of reflective nationally. You know, we didn't have this huge tidal wave. There was definitely a red undercurrent, but not in any sense a tidal wave. And I guess going forward for state politics, how do you see all of this playing into politics on the state level?
Well, the if you look in the state legislative level in Westchester, the races were not that competitive, so I don't really see that changing substantially. Now, on the statewide, on the statewide level, Republicans did do better. But the enrollment advantage to the Democrats still remains 2-1. And when you have New York City as part of the state of New York, where the Republicans have a very small presence, it's the Republicans are saying, well, I think they won 30% of the vote basically this year. Well, if we can get it to 35%, that will help us in a statewide race. So, the last time a governor won in New York, that was George Pataki,
a Republican,
big scale, born and raised, moved to Garrison. But if you look back then, there was the difference in enrollment statewide was much closer. There wasn't such a big gap between Republicans and Democrats then. So I don't know. It's certainly Zeldin made it, gave Republicans a shot in the arm, mm-hmm. in the sense that he did better than Molinaro, Rob Astorino.
And you think that was all by playing that crime card?
Well, that was certainly part of it, and I think the crime card and the hook being the bail reform, mm-hmm. that was passed by the state legislature, that was at least a policy hook, and then plus the media, some of the studies of the media, certainly the New York City papers, the New York Post, showing the way that the huge number of crime stories that kind of has grown this year, kind of added to the perception of crime.
Yeah, we always have a spillover effect of issues from the city into the local suburbs, I think. So if crime's up in New York, there's this perception locally, oh, it must be up here as well.
Yes, and the reason, one reason people are in Westchester is because they want to get out of New York City to the suburbs, one reason being the crime in the city.
Perceived crime, at least.
Yeah, that's one of the... certainly one of the reasons to move, the traditional reason to move to the suburbs. So
where crime is going down.
where crime is going down.
By the way, you threw that in as an aside, but do you have any numbers on that or time frame or results of research?
We'll have to do some research and come back on the next show with it.
Okay. Our time is up. Thank you, Journal News columnist David McKay Wilson, for sharing facts, views, and insights this morning. You can read Dave's columns in hard copy in the Journal News or online at lohud.com. And listeners, our next show will be Wednesday, December 21st at 9 in the morning here on VOX 1460. Tomorrow, and I hope all have a good day and a very, very happy, peaceful Thanksgiving.